Welcome to the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists News Catch-Up. It's Friday the 24th of November. I'm Vicky Harris, Head of Learning, and I'm here with Derek Munn, RCSLT's Director of Policy and Public Affairs. And we are delighted to be joined by RCSLT's CEO, Steve Jamieson, as a special guest for this edition. Good morning, everybody.
Morning. Good morning.
Dave, it's lovely to have you here today. When you first came on this podcast in April, you were quite new in post. Promised you would go around the UK meeting with members. And I wonder if you could share with us and the listeners where you've been on that journey, please, and why that's so important.
Yes, good morning and thank you. Thank you for asking me to talk about my journey with RCSLT so far. As you say, Vicky, it's been a hectic 8 months, but I have to say I've enjoyed every single minute of it. I was very clear when I was appointed as chief exec that I would be out and about at least once a week, traveling across all four nations of the United Kingdom to meet members and just visit them in their place of work. And firstly, I guess I'd just like to say a really big thank you to all those members who I've met, and I guess for their hospitality, their honesty and their sheer professionalism. It has been amazing to do these visits. I guess, as you know, I don't come from the profession of speech and language therapist, and therefore I've been on a really steep learning curve, just getting my head around the breadth of the profession and also the challenges and opportunities for our members and on how they face those on a daily basis. But I now have visited all four nations and have been welcomed by everyone that I've met. I think one thing for me, it's really important, and for the Royal College to be visible for our members, as I know it feels sometimes that, you know, it's often regarded as if the staff live in some ivory tower in the middle of London somewhere, and that's certainly just not the case. And that's something that I've wanted to change since I've come into post. I've also been accompanied by other members of staff from RCSLT as I've been doing my visits. And I want to make sure that that continues as well. It's really important, not just for me, but for other staff to meet members and see, you know, the role that our organization is doing to be able to support our members in their workplace. So that will continue as we move forward. And I have already visits booked up until sort of March and April next year. So those visits are continuing around the four nations, which is fabulous. It's only by seeing our members and listening to their stories, I think, that I've been able to address some of the concerns that they have and help as an organisation to support them with some of these. And I also believe that as a Royal College, I think we need to be able to empower our members to do the best that they possibly can. And I think we're very good at doing that and supporting our members in their journey. I think it's also really important for us to engage with our members. And that's why we have appointed a membership engagement officer to be able to look at the various member categories and help to support each one of those as we move forward. So yes, it's been a really busy 8 months, Vicky, but certainly I've enjoyed every minute of it and I've learned so much over the past 8 months.
That's fantastic, thank you. What in particular do you think you've learned and what surprised you the most, perhaps?
I guess I've learned a great deal. I've learned that speech and language therapists are dedicated individuals who really care passionately both for their profession, but I guess really passionately care for the service users and the patients that they care for. So that's the number one thing. I have seen passion and enthusiasm and professionalism across every single site that I've been able to visit. You know, I guess I've also learned that even though there's a real shortage of staff and the workforce is a real difficult situation, speech and language therapists are always thinking about innovative ways to improve care for all. And I think they're very good at thinking out of the box at how we can do things differently to improve the services, even though some of those services are in, you know, in difficult situations. I guess I've also learned that in whether you work in clinical practice or education or research or indeed in leadership roles, all speech and language therapists want the best for their teams and ultimately direct care provision. And teamwork seems to be key across every site that I've visited. And the teams really work together and come together to help address some of the bigger issues. I guess I've also learned that it's really tough out there. There are major issues, as I've said, with workforce, with staff morale, with cuts to services, and difficulties around career progression as well. So, it is really tough for our members now, and I recognize that. But I also recognize that from a Royal College point of view, they're the sort of things that we could begin to support and help our members with. What has surprised me most in all of the work that speech and language therapists do is how they do everything from birth to end of life care and everything in between. And that's something, even though I've worked in the NHS and the health world for 40 years now, that's something I was never really totally aware of before taking on this role as chief exec. So I'll give you a couple of examples. It was a real pleasure to spend some time in the intensive care unit at Wolverhampton. With a speech and language therapist who had become an integral part of the multidisciplinary team of that intensive care unit. It was just amazing to see her work, but also how she was regarded as a key member of the team in intensive care. It was also really amazing to spend the day with Gillian Rudd and Melanie Packer at Birmingham City University, just meeting some of their BSc and their master's students. And hearing about sort of the passion that they have. And what I was really impressed with Birmingham was how they have used the expertise and experience of service users to help develop the syllabus and the program around bachelor's and master's programs. And I met some of those service users who sit on interview panels for the students who are coming onto the courses, et cetera. And that just really made me really proud of what our profession does and how they do it. That integral sort of collaborative co-production working, which is fabulous. I spent a day with Greater Manchester with obviously the inspirational Michelle Morris and her team, and witnessed the speech and language therapists in a nursery and a primary school. And for me, it's really a real humbling moment when I sat in with a speech and language therapist working with a very young child, and just watching the relationship that she was building with this kid. I've been to Glasgow with Derek, in fact, where we met some speech and language therapists who work in a quite a deprived area of Glasgow, but how they dedicated their experience and work with children. And how they ensure that the families who are living in these deprived areas actually get the services they require, even though there's very little resources available for them. And research, really, I spent a day with the Bristol Speech and Language Research Unit and working with Professor Yvonne Wren and her team at looking at all of the various research projects that are around. I've been to Wales and I've met amazing speech and language therapists looking at working in dementia care and working in the youth justice and criminal justice centres, which again was great. I've been to Northern Ireland and visited speech and language therapists at the Royal Victoria Hospital, where they were working with young people who have got cancer and working with a child who had a brain tumor, and the speech and language therapist was doing some amazing work with this child and really supported by the family, and the parents were speaking so highly of our SLT member. But I also want to share one thing which was really powerful over the past couple of months, and that was a highlight for me when I was accompanied to the House of Lords and to the House of Commons with one of our members, Charlotte Crosby from Wolverhampton. And Charlotte manages adult and children's services. And we invited Charlotte to come along with us to meet an MP, and then further later on that day to meet one of the Lords. And Charlotte was able to really discuss the issues that are affecting her and her service to both the MP and to the Lord. And it was a real turn point moment for Charlotte to know that she was able to, I guess, influence and lobby both of those individuals about the really good work that's happening, but also some of the difficulties that they're having. So, really, really remarkable work that's happening that I've observed. One thing I have realized in all of this is that whilst it's truly remarkable work, speech and language therapists believe that this is almost like normal part of their day duty, and they don't see it as being anything extra or anything special. And I just think, in my eyes, what an amazing job our members do. So I really want us to shout really loud about what a great profession this really is.
Thank you. That's quite a summary of, I know, a very, very busy 8 months. I wonder if what you've seen and heard will feed into your plans for the future of our CISL team. Maybe has anything gone to the top of your to-do list as a result of meeting members and going out and about?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, I think for me, on my travels, what I realized that our speech and language therapists are highly professional, but actually some of them don't feel that they've got the confidence to be the leaders of the future. And I think there's a real piece for me and a piece for the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists to look at developing a leadership program and incorporating within that program things around commissioning services, service provision, and the ability to be able to influence and politically lobby, et cetera, I think is really important. You know, I want to see our speech and language services to be the leaders of the future, to be, you know, the future capos of this, of the four nations, to be the next chief exec at the Royal College. You know, so for me, it's about how do we develop our really professional members to be the leaders of the future. So one of the things in my list is looking at how we develop and implement an RCSLT leadership program to be able to do that. And I think that's one of my key priorities moving forward. As I mentioned earlier, obviously, I think what's really key as well and going to the top of my list is around our membership engagement and how we engage our members much more actively in the work of our organisation. It is a membership organisation, and I want our members to feel that they are part of our organisation. So I think that's really important as well. Politically, we also need to just think about the governments in the four nations and how we make sure that we have got our speech and language service being able to lobby and influence on that and influence the future provision of service delivery. And in England, for example, we just need to work really closely with NHS England around the workforce plan and how we help to influence and make sure that we sort out some of these issues. Moving on, I think, Vicky, there are a couple more things I'd just like to mention. One is we are doing a lot of work around our EDI programs, but I want to make sure that areas such as our anti-racism work is not just like highlighted in work that we do. I want it to be embedded in everything that we do, both from a Royal College point of view, but also in every speech and language therapist's day-to-day work. I want us to not just think about it, but actually embed it in it so that we can feel it and see it as we go through. And another area is, you know, I've been to the board of ASLTIP, our independent members, and I've been with Sarah Buckley, who's the chair of ASLTIP, and really just thinking about how we work really closely with our independent members, practitioners, I think is really important as well. And I think, you know, finally, as I've got a better understanding of the organisation and the profession over the past 8 months, you know, I see my job as being influencing the leaders of health and social care. So, you know, with my regular one-to-ones with the capos across four nations, I think it's really important. And I also just want to continue the brilliant work that we do with our charities and other stakeholders to make sure that those relationships continue to flourish and that we work together collaboratively and through co-production that we're able to do a lot more. So, yeah, lots of things on our list, Vicky. But I, you know, as I said before, I just want to be really clear that we look at the workforce issues, we're able to support our members, and that raising the profile of the profession is really important. And then my final plea is, if I was able to sort out prescribing in my tenure as chief exec at the Royal College, I think I would be a very happy man. But as most of our members know, it's not just as easy as that. But believe me that I am banging the drum, and I know that the team at RCSLT are also doing lots of work behind the scenes, but I would like that to be one of my legacies if I was able to sort out prescribing for speech and language therapists. So there you go, that's my sort of plan for the next while. But as I said, Vicky, really, really enjoying my role here at the college.
Brilliant. Thank you. What an ambitious list. And let's keep fingers crossed for the prescribing. I'm going to go over to Derek now. So, Derek, it's been a very busy few weeks in Westminster. There's been a King's Speech. There's been a cabinet reshuffle. And this week there's been an autumn financial statement. Do you have any reflections on what this means for speech and language therapy?
Thanks, Vicky. You're right. It's a particularly fast-moving time in politics, although it feels like we've been saying that for a number of years now. In terms of the King's speech, I think the key thing was what wasn't there. We were hoping, although not expecting, that the long-awaited reform of mental health legislation in England and Wales would come forward. It did not do so. This is a disappointment. And the Labour Party have now said that they will pick it up if they win the election. We shall see. There were several justice bills in the King's speech, and we will, as we often do, be making the case to ensure that speech, language and communication are appropriately recognised in justice systems and procedures as those laws go through. In terms of the announcement on the day of the financial statement this week, we were particularly pleased to see the announcement of the Partnership for Inclusion of Neurodiversity in Schools. We've been involved in this behind the scenes for some time. It's going to be an innovative delivery model improving access to specialist support in mainstream primary, and there's money attached to it. So that was a bit of good news from this week. And then we continue to work with all the parties as we run into the election, particularly around, for example, Labour's pledge around fluency and early language intervention in schools, but also, as Steve was mentioning, prescribing rights for SLTs and other professionals.
Great, thank you. And of course, a nice little segue here. Steve, you were at Westminster recently as well for a special event. The broadcaster and former footballer Chris Kamara joined Saqib Barty, MP, at the House of Commons for an event on improving support for people who communicate differently or with difficulty. I wonder if you can tell us about that, please.
Yes, as you say, Vicky, it was a really great event. I believe we had about 100 people there. And as you say, it was hosted by Saqib Barty, MP, and we had Chris Kamara as the key speaker at the event. Chris, obviously, being a football personality, had received lots of attention by most people who were there. And I think he really enjoyed being with us and spoke really eloquently about the condition that he has and how he is campaigning to support people with speech and communication difficulties. So that was great. I think Derek, I'm sure, will give more details about this, but I guess I just wanted to highlight the work that we do with our politicians, etc. is really important, because Saqib Barty was instrumental in helping us to pull together this high profile event. And I think if our members can develop their, you know, good relationships with their politicians, I think that's really important, because if they get them to come along to their services or understand the work of speech and language therapists, it really helps around that influencing part as well. But yeah, a really great event. And I think a lot of people left that event really understanding the impact that someone with a speech communication difficulty has, but also understanding the role of speech and language therapy much more. But yes, I'm not sure if Derek wants to say anything more.
You've covered it in the main, Steve. We met some existing parliamentary contacts, but also some new MPs that we haven't met before, who we're now able to follow up with. And I know that members have also been to visit their MPs as a result of this. We had international contacts. We had people who came from the United States for that event, and also just to build a relationship with Chris himself, who is such a powerful advocate for, in his case, adults with apraxia.
Great, thank you both. And I wonder what's happening around the UK that will interest listeners, and maybe this one's for you, Derek.
Yes, very briefly, and we can return to these next month, perhaps, if we need to. The same week that we had the event at Westminster, we also had events in the Northern Ireland Assembly and the Welsh Senedd focused on DLD, which was great. And actually a quick focus on Wales, because Wales have also had a ministerial visit with the Health Secretary. We've had evidence given by the head of our Wales team, Pippa, at the Senedd around disabled children and young people having equal access to education and care. So it's been a strong time in Wales. Three very quick wins we've had at UK level to finish. First of all, there were some concerns around clarity between the NICE stroke guideline and the Intercollegiate Working Group. We managed to get that clarified. It's very clear that the NICE guideline of 45 minutes per day post-stroke is not affected by the wording around motor therapy in the Working Party guideline. Secondly, early years proposals, Department for Education are not implementing a proposal to reduce the percentage of level two qualified staff, which was a big concern to us. And thirdly, although we're still waiting for this change to be made, we've got agreement from NHS England to correct an error in the all-age autism assessment guidelines so that the SLT role in interview and diagnosis is properly recognised, because we know this has been causing real difficulties for services on the ground. So it's slightly technical, but there's stuff on the website. But good news around stroke and around early years and around autism assessment.
Fantastic. Thank you. And I know we've talked about the autism stuff before, so that's really good. Any final thoughts to leave listeners with? And I might pass this one to you, Steve, as our special guest.
Thank you, Vicky. Last comments. I suppose we're all going into that real busy time of holiday season, and we're getting into winter and winter pressures. And I think that in itself causes a great deal of work and also extra stress for lots of people. I think my final word would be for our members to look after themselves and look after their own health and well-being over this period when it can become quite stressful. It can become a difficult time with the extra pressures at work. But please look after yourself, and just remember that the Royal College is always there for you as a member. And if there's anything that we can do to help support you in your day-to-day work, then you know where we are.